Welcome to part two of my discussion on Gemini with the astrologer Melanie Reinhardt. If you're just jumping into this episode, I suggest going back to the previous one to hear part one of our chat on the mystical experience of the lost twin. In this episode, we will spend more time in the mythic and the astrological, discussing Gemini's position in between the earthy Taurus and the watery Cancer, and its struggle to keep enough air in the room. We also touch upon the twins of Greek mythology, Castor and Pollux, who are the bright stars of the constellation of Gemini. The messenger god Hermes / Mercury then helps us fill in the gaps as the ruling deity of this sign before we turn our attention to laughter as medicine and how it can help us recharge in times of deep grief, sadness and loss. I hope you enjoy this conversation. If you do, please feel free to send Melanie or myself a message to let her or me know. We'll leave it as a review on your podcast app of choice. And here is part two of my discussion with Melanie Reinhardt.
So all the first four signs of the zodiac. Aries is like primal fire, Taurus primal earth, Gemini primal air, and then Cancer primal water. So they are intensely developmental signs in the sense of the roots of whatever element is being considered. They are there in those first four signs, which, again, if we look at it developmentally, it's the sign of Cancer that kind of rounds off the development of an individual with all four elements represented, and hence the attraction and also the resistance or fear in the sign of Gemini towards the whole realm of feeling. So Gemini is between Taurus and Cancer. So broadly speaking, I found that the other twins, in the sense that we're exploring it, are typically of an earthy variety or of a feeling variety. And they have it has a different feel about it, you know.
So it's like the twin is leaning either back into the earth or forward into the water.
Or forward into the feeling.
Yeah, into the feeling of it all.
And then, you know, the light twin, the one that's often called the heavenly twin, you know.
Yeah.
Might feel a sense of feeling caught or trapped between these two heavy downward twin tending elements, the earth and the water, and hence the desire to escape or to flee or to depart the scene. And this is described in pop psychology as being fickle. Fickle or changeable, but hey, you know, what's that about?
Right.
But if you look at the symbolism underlying it, it's kind of obvious, really.
Yeah, I'm thinking about mythically as well, you know, Castor and Pollux, and them also being born with Helen and Clytemnestra, and the two eggs. And so then there's this combination between the four of them, right? So
yes,
it's like the immortal twin, or maybe the mortal twin, or maybe the female twin, or maybe the male twin. And you can sort of go through all combinations of them all, right? So that other element of that twin, I suppose, as you were talking about, the one that you lose in the womb, or that sense, you know, like more like the feeling we get with the story of losing a twin in the womb, rather than, well, is this true that you lose a twin in the womb? Like that's not the juicy part here. I don't think the juicy part is, you know, what does it feel like? Think about that.
Exactly.
You know, and then what is that twin like? Is it the immortal self that you've lost at that point? Is it the male self? Is it the female self? You know, who is it that you lose?
Well, in a way, that points to, in the sign of Gemini being the primary field within which we confront the experience of separation. So obviously physically at birth, that is a huge separation that we go through. And that's why the cutting of the cord, to me, makes sense in terms of that's the moment of birth, is that physical separation. But in a way, the longing for the reconnection, be that with the lost twin, should we be born as twins and one of them dies or departs before we do, we come full term and get born, or whether it's the separation from the mother, inside whose body we lived for about 9 months. It's all we've ever known. And then through our life, there can be multiple separations. There will be, because people will die, pets will die, we might relocate to a totally different place. Our beloved pet, dog, cat, etc., may die. Family members may die. We may read about death, see it on television, etc. It's an endless, endless litany of the original separation, which from the mystical point of view, it would be said that back behind everything is the one. And this is beyond any kind of a form. So the moment one names it or describes it, we're back in the realm of division and multiplication and so forth. So that's why, you know, in some traditions, it's not permitted to pronounce the name of God.
Right.
And, you know, in Islam, there are the 99 names of Allah, and implicate behind that is the one. So they emanate out from the one. And in traditions like the Kabbalah, you know, it's a whole elaborate structure which moves towards the one. And so we come from the one, so to speak, and return to the one. And en route, the separation that we experience and have to incorporate in some way is one of disconnection or separation. And it seems to be intrinsic to the human experience that that will be experienced. And in the course of our awakening, that will need to be understood, as it were, correctly. And by correctly there, I mean the origin of those feelings. It has its origin in the spiritual process. Because although actual loss is part of life, it's so enormous because it echoes that very original separation. So we could say, and I think I believe, that we're all here on earth trying to heal that sense of separation, because a lot flows from that. It ends up in, you know, the kind of situation that we have on our planet today, of everybody fighting with everybody. And of in desperation. And of course, you know, Castor and Pollux, they were the warring twins. Who both, it was a love-hate relationship, because they were, they're an expression of the anguish and the conflicting emotions that come in that sense of separation. Because we're all kind of down here looking for the kind of union that can really only rest in the oneness of the one.
Yeah, it's bringing to mind a few different things, obviously. But one would be the Pisces. It just keeps popping into my mind, those two fish separated by the umbilical cord of Pisces, yes. Another mutable sign. And something that Jason Holly talked about was the Sagittarius being a centaur, And then that centaur, which is the combination of human and animal, like basically indistinguishable sort of feeling. And then the opposite of that being Gemini, where there's the split not only of the animal and the human, but they also both get split into two. So now you have the Castor and Pollux, the two horsemen riding on horses, as opposed to Sagittarius, where it's one centaur. So both
Yes.
of those really good images coming from the other mutable signs to give us the sense of like what we're longing for of the one, in the sense of that being forever connected to the other fish in Pisces,
Yes.
you know, and also being animal consciousness, human consciousness combined in the centaur, field. That,
Yes, absolutely.
yeah, these images that astrology is so. I mean, this is the thing about the mystery of astrology as well, right? Like how it speaks in symbolic form. And it's got so much to say, but it's sort of like, are we able to hear it? Are we able to go in? Maybe Gemini is sort of like a I don't know, a conduit or a doorway where we can go in with the right attitude. It feels like that there's something within the mindset of the beginner, or the mindset of maybe like you were talking about the mystery twin or the mystic twin or the one who is in the not knowing or the don't know,
Yeah.
who's able to pick up on all these little symbolic pattern pieces that you just have to sort of sit and stare at it, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, stare at it with that curiosity of like, what is
Yeah.
this? And I think you really, when I first met you in 2008, there was something in the course that you were running then that really encouraged us to just. One of the practices that really stuck with me is that you folded up pieces of paper in the middle of the room, and everybody just went and grabbed a piece of paper, and in that was a glyph of a zodiac sign.
Oh, yes.
Remember this? Yeah. And we just had to sit and meditate on the image itself or the symbol, and just sort of see what came through. So really the honoring of these symbols, and I think it always stuck with me what you said about it, that we don't really know where these symbols came from. There's no origin point that we can point to this place and or somebody that maybe drew them or something like that. There's just these symbols that were passed down as astrologers. And
Yeah, well, and I'm not sure if it was the same one that you're referring to, but there was one where we did that with movement.
movement, yeah.
Yeah.
And that was more in the 12 Holy Nights where
Oh, yeah.
we'd move according to the signs as well, or get into the shape, either move or find the shape, and then see what comes through the body. So these
Yes.
kind of access points, you know, it's kind of,
Yeah, I like that phrase, access points. Yeah.
yeah, it's kind of like when Hermes, in the myth where Hermes creates music, basically turns that tortoise into a lyre and starts playing music, and the first deity that he references as his beginning point is Mnemosyne, as like that cellular memory, right? The mother of the muses, to take us back
Yes.
to there. And I think that's a very significant thing. He's not so interested in the big Battle of the Titans. You know, he doesn't go back to Gaia and Uranus and the whole kind of epic that happens out of that. He goes back to Mnemosyne, and almost like signaling that as the access point to memory.
Yeah, like the cell memory.
Like the cell memory, yeah, cellular memory.
Yeah, so you don't find cell memory necessarily in erudite books.
No.
But we all have our own cell memories, which are referring to our own physical origins. And by reflection, so to speak, it seems that they also provide metaphors which can put us in touch with our own spiritual origins, even though we can't necessarily name that or describe it, etc.
Yeah, there's this great irony, right? Like, I can see behind you all the books, and if we were at my place, there'd be books everywhere, you know, of course, where, and it's the Gemini experience, perhaps. My Mars is in Gemini, constantly trying to get as much information as I can, and then at the same time, that other twin knows that it's all, like, you won't get it that way at the same time. But in this, but then again, like your experience of Rudyard, when you're in your nodal return, approximately, right? His words actually did put you in touch with something. They didn't tell you something. They just put you in touch with something. And then you were like, okay, yeah, I'm in, you know.
That's so true.
Yeah.
It's not like words and the intellect are things which have no value and meaning, and we should just not even bother with
them. Exactly. Not that. Yeah.
It's almost like they create, thinking of Rudyard here, some kind of vehicle through which understanding flows to the individual.
You know? Right.
Just looking for some more things here about. So, you know, also the hunger for knowledge and information in Gemini is one expression of the absolute need and desire to connect, to reconnect. And so the joy of a kind of an aha experience for the Gemini is to almost, it's like an echo of that feeling of connecting with something greater, the greater whole, as Rudyard would use that kind of language, you know?
Yeah, and that hunger can be so deep and can go off in so many different directions, can't it? Just to give a little voice to that of, yeah, how we can misplace that hunger or try to, yeah.
Exactly. You know,
I'm just thinking about the beginnings of addictive process there, where we get that first bit of confusion of that thing that we're looking for, that we're like, what are we really looking for? It feels more Piscean to me, that we're looking for that spiritual connection
absolutely.
To the one, to the whole.
Looking to merge with and join with.
Yeah.
Or to be consumed by.
Right.
So that word, consumed, makes me think of consuming or the consumer. So we know that Hermes was the god of commerce. And so, you know, the way that advertising works is ways and means of convincing somebody else that they need what you have to offer. So you sell it to them. And so the word commerce, again, com is with mers, would that be, again, merging? Not sure of the etymology there. But certainly mingling. And I think that it's the sign of Virgo, which would be more associated with commerce, also ruled by Mercury, Hermes. But it's an earth sign, so it's more to do with practical things, skills and money and that kind of thing. But that same urge to merge, let's call it, can be found there as well.
Well, I was just thinking down, I just had dinner the other night at a place called La Mer. No, I had lunch yesterday. And it's called Mer because, like, it's the ocean. This is where we get the mer maid, right? The maid is a maiden of the ocean. So also Mer, you know, maybe the com Mer might be with the ocean, just to play with that a little bit.
Oh, very nice.
It could be. But yeah, the commerce is creating the idea that you're not enough until you have this, and that's ultimately what it's doing, right? You're not enough until you have this, but if you get this, then you'll be a little
Then you will be
closer.
whole again.
Yeah, then you'll be whole again until you're not, but then you can buy it again. Don't worry. You can come and buy it again. Which is interesting because in Hermes' story, when he sacrifices Apollo, two of Apollo's bulls or cows, to the 12 gods, including himself, of course, it says at the very start of the story that he's very hungry for meat. And then as he's doing this process, he's cooking up all of the meat and he's salivating and he's just like, wants to partake and eat, and he doesn't eat. So actually he doesn't eat the meat
Wow.
because he's actually got this reverence to the 12 gods. And
Oh, that's
also,
so interesting.
right? And he doesn't partake, but it does to make a point of saying how he's hungry specifically for meat. And then when he's in the space of the most delicious meat, he doesn't eat it. He
Wow.
doesn't partake. Yeah. And actually, Lewis Hyde writes a lot about it, this in Trickster Makes This World. Sort of fascinating, amazing book, if you haven't read it, by the way. It's an incredible Gemini book.
Just
And I've been
making a
trying to,
note of
yeah, I've been trying to figure
it.
out who Lu what Lewis Hyde's astrology might be, because he wrote a book called The Gift. He wrote a book called Common as Air, which is about copyright stuff. And a really deep dive into the what belongs to the commons and what belongs to individuals. It's a fascinating book.
Yes, because there is as Hermes as the thief.
As the thief, yeah, exactly. And then he wrote Trickster Makes This World, which is absolutely stunning. It's amazing. He talks a lot about Hermes in it, and Coyote, and Monkey King, all these trickster gods. But he makes a real point of that from that myth, from the Homeric myth to Hermes, that yeah, he's hungry for meat and yet he doesn't eat the meat because he has the discipline. Actually, this is feels to me like astrologically the Virgo side of the Mercurial. Now here comes the wind through my microphone again. But that, yeah, that side. But it could also be related to Gemini in some ways as well. Kind of like he understands commerce well enough to know that this is not, that you don't partake in that, almost like Steve Jobs not giving his own kids iPads, right? Like he creates the
Right,
iPads, but he doesn't let his own
exactly.
kids have them,
Yes.
or, people that work in tech companies and social media companies and things, and they know not to really limit their own children's participation in that. Because
Yeah.
of what it can do to the mind. So somewhere in there, it's like knowing that and then also not participating in that in order to keep the mind clear and in order to keep that focus on the divine, which is, a really interesting thing I think about. I'd love to, yeah, it may be something about the Gemini archetype, right? Because this is something to do with the divine twin. Or the daimon or the genius,
Yes,
right? It is something to
yes.
do with
And
that.
if we think of Gemini as opposite Sagittarius, well, there is the orientation towards the divine or the recognition of a higher level
Right.
of intuitive thought. But if we think of a yod from Sagittarius, we get to Cancer and Taurus,
Taurus, yeah.
both of whom are very, very retentive signs. With very strong emotional and physical appetites and instincts and drives are extremely powerful in those two signs. So Gemini is like, oh, in the middle, knowing that the way to connect is towards the Sagittarius, Zeus, Jupiter, but having to deal with these two siblings on either side, okay.
Which is so, back to this myth to Hermes, because I just spent so much time in it over the last couple of years for some reason. I just got really pulled towards it. But he steals the cattle, so he steals the cows, the Taurean element, and he escapes from basically his mother's cave, right? Like he's trying to get out of the cave that his mother that he's
Yeah,
born
there's
into.
the
Yeah, there he is. He's like in
There he
between
is.
those. But he handles it because he is Hermes. He is the Gemini, element. He handles it with such playfulness and fun. and he has a really good time along the way. So it's almost like he feels, you know, his very first move is to break free of the crib, right? That's his first prison.
Mm-hmm.
And his very first move is like, I got to get out of here. This is not going to hold me. And so the tension point that Gemini experiences itself in as two twins connected to Cancer and Taurus, I'm really taking that in as a really important point of this sign, especially as a mutable sign, right?
Yes, and so seeking the reflection and the anchoring in the direction of the Sagittarius,
right,
so to speak. So you're either getting sort of pinned down or torn apart by the very different forces on either side.
Yeah.
And in that sense, being sort of corralled himself to connect with the Sagittarius, you know, way on the other
side.
Well,
of course, because in the myth, then he gets an audience with Zeus, you know, who is Jupiter. And the whole point, in a sense, of everything that he's done is to get that audience. And once he gets that audience, he's fine with Apollo. He's okay. He just wanted to get a chance to meet with Zeus and basically show him who he was, right?
Yes.
Which was a liar and a thief, and he didn't hide any of that. He lied straight to Zeus's face.
Yeah.
And Zeus loved him, you know, as he is. And so he just knew that if he needs to get out of this cave, he needs to get out of this situation. And to his mother, Maya, he says that to her, right? She chastises him and he's like, what plan do you have to get out of this cave? We're going to be sitting with the immortals, you know. That's my plan. What's your plan? Kind of thing.
Wow. Do you know, until this conversation right now, I hadn't actually connected the stories of Hermes in the mythology.
Yeah.
And the actual, just literally geometric placing
of the Taurus, Cancer, and Sag.
Taurus, Cancer, and Sag. Yeah.
I haven't put them all together either until you put the yod there. I was like, hang on, wait. Well, that would put, you know, that pointing to Sagittarius, so pointing to getting the audience with Zeus.
Yeah. And even, you know, I'm thinking of the episode with the sandals.
Right.
After he'd stolen the cows.
Yeah.
Where he put sandals on backwards.
Where he creates them.
When he was running away, so that the footprints he left would mislead people into thinking that he went that way, and meanwhile he went the other way.
he makes those sandals. He walks the cows backwards, which is an incredible feat of strength for a one-day-old or a zero-day-old. You know, he's only just been born. And he creates these sandals with all of that in mind, right, of how that needs to be. Yeah, the craftiness.
Yeah. So looking for the way through or the way out so that he doesn't get completely swallowed up or pegged down
right
by either the Cancerian or the Taurian energies because he knows where he has to go.
Yeah. And that's what Gemini maybe is there to help us with, or, you know, or is there to assist us with, to be able to embody that energy.
Yes. And also to be put in touch with a larger transpersonal, spiritual, cosmological context within which the Gemini mind or Hermes in the mythology can safely play around and have some fun.
Yeah, because then essentially he does make peace with Apollo. He does make peace with his mother.
Yes.
And so he is able to be in those things, but he's also able to be in his spiritual quest.
Exactly. And he's also, you know, develops into a being who is a major facilitator of other people's destinies.
Right.
Like he shows up all over the place.
Yeah.
in mythology, you know, arriving in the nick of time with the crucial message to
Yeah.
prevent somebody doing something really totally disastrous,
Right.
or liaises or mediates between different people, and moves the story onwards. So he's there at the crucial moment where things might have worked out totally differently had he not showed up,
Right.
kind of thing. So there is this the mutability, the moving energy and helping energy to move in situations that are crucially stuck in a certain way.
Yeah, even if that's just like to lighten things up at the right
Yeah.
moment, right? And to say the slightly off or maybe very off inappropriate thing just to bring a little lightness to the moment at hand.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like,
Absolutely. You
yeah.
know, I totally find that, you know, if I feel I've kind of it, that I've kind of lost my sense of humor and nothing seems to be funny anymore, I know I'm really in trouble,
Now you're
you
in
know.
trouble. Now you're in some
But
strife.
if I've been feeling particularly heavy or glum or whatever,
That's when you need Hermes or
what
Pan
the,
or
yeah, and
Iambi.
the moment that I suddenly find something funny, I can feel my entire energy shifting throughout
Yeah.
my whole being, you know. And I think to be a true comedian is like that. And I find myself not finding that very much amongst, you know, the general run of folks who call themselves comedians and so
Yeah.
forth. I find it's often a kind of a disguised hostility or a compulsive desire to shock and all of those.
Interesting. Yeah.
But the master of this kind of cosmic humor, of course, has to be Swami Beyondananda.
Okay.
That's the alter ego of this human called Steve Behrman, Behrman. For me, he is the funniest man on the planet, and there's not a whiff of hostility. He's a
Wow.
mind opener, heart opener kind of person.
Amazing.
Absolutely incredible. And you know, he had a progressed new moon recently and has become far more politically outspoken now. And you know, even though he's got you know, very strong beliefs and principles and is much more open about them now, his capacity for puns, it's second to none, I tell you. So his website is wakeuplaughing.com.
Okay.
And so he has this alter ego called Swami Beyondananda, where he dresses up in a turban and puts on an Indian accent. And I think he began doing this work with this alter ego. It must have been way back in the 60s when everybody was going to the East to get enlightened, and lots of gurus coming and people obsessed with gurus and all that. And oh God, his level of humor about all of that is just absolutely priceless.
Wonderful. I've never heard of him somehow.
Okay. Well, I'm a huge fan of his, and I wanted to mention his work in one of my newsletters. I can't remember what I was writing about, but it seemed appropriate, and I didn't have his chart and so forth. So I sent him an email
Wow.
introducing myself and saying, you know, I'd really love to feature your chart in my newsletter, and you know, here's an example of it. And I can't remember what it was, but it was something where the issue of humor was important. And you know, I just said who I was, and you know, that I'd love to see his horoscope. And you know, he was very open. He said, yeah, fine, you know, here's my data. And then, you know, I said, you know, and he didn't, yeah, he was just really open. And so then when I did his chart, the progressions were so striking that I then asked him, I said, you know, do you want me to kind of say anything about it? And he said, yeah, whatever. It was, you know, yeah. You know, it was just very cool. So I wrote and told him about this progressed new moon in Sagittarius in the ninth house, mind you. And I thought, whoa, this is incredible. And it was obvious just from that. I thought he must have been, deeply in a transition and maybe preparing some new way to emerge. And, he's a bit old school, not very techie, but, he still does mostly live stand-up shows al along the West Coast, And I would love to see him live. I mean, you can see some videos of him working live. But anyway, when I wrote that, he then told me that he was just about to come out with a whole lot of his ideological and political stuff that he'd always really kept under wraps.
Wow.
And then, boom, he just took off.
Wow.
And he gives a lot of free programs and podcasts and that kind of thing, connecting up with a lot of other sort of spiritual influences in a good way, And anyway, he's just a fantastic guy, I think.
Amazing. So yeah, that need, or the way that the Gemini, I think that's one of the key elements, right? But I kind of like within the mythology of Hermes that he knows where the reverence is and he knows where the irreverence is. And I think that's really one
Yes,
of the big keys there. Like you said,
that's so important.
So it's not kind of where you're using irreverence in a way that is actually just disrespectful, or in the way that you said before, of like when there's just maybe a bit of a meanness rather than a satire, or rather than an actual form of comedy there.
So, there's from time to time, there's a whole to-do about the blasphemy laws in this country, and I expect elsewhere as well. But what you've just said to me is like a crucial piece of discernment as to when humor is, well, more than okay. It's actually really uplifting and restorative, and when it is seriously not okay. I remember once hearing a discussion about this that, for my mind, didn't really go anywhere. It was on the radio. But one thing the person said, it was a Jewish man who said, well, he said, R really, the only people who should be making jokes about Jews are Jews. So, as a way of laughing at oneself. But in the main, people who might be making jokes about Jews would more likely to be doing it from a place of hostility, and that seems to be the divider. So what you said about Hermes being fully aware of what's reverend and what's irreverent, that just seems crucial to me.
And in his and the way, he steals Apollo's cattle, that seems pretty irreverent, right? But then when he's sacrificing, he is doing it meticulously to the 12 gods, including Apollo and including Hermes. But yeah, that ability to walk that line, I think, is an art. Or even,
Absolutely. Or almost, the way of what is sometimes called crazy wisdom, in the sense that something in it's said that, certain actions of an enlightened being may be incomprehensible or even a bit offensive towards ordinary mortals like us, but that they have a wisdom, which often involves unseating what is pompous or full of narcissism or that kind of thing, like,
And that's
turning
what
the tables on things.
I consider the stealing of the cattle is, especially as it comes to the end, but Hermes ends up giving Apollo, well, he plays that music and Apollo is mesmerized by it, and so in the end Apollo is given music and Apollo gives away his cows to Hermes. So there's that, that it's, there's an exchange that actually ends up happening, which would never would have happened if Hermes hadn't stolen the cattle. So you get this sense at the end, you can see, oh wow, there was a wisdom here that I'm not sure even Hermes would have known when he's doing the thing, because he's just kind of alive and in the moment, right? But in the end, you see the wisdom of it. Whether Hermes knew, that's impossible to know. I get the sense that not really, and yes, right? Like it kind of both of those things at once. He knew something and needed to happen, and maybe the pomposity, as you say, of this Apollo having 50 cattle, it just seemed a little bit absurd to him, and so he decided to mess with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And also just listening to you describe that reminded me of the whole notion of paradox.
Mm.
And I remember once as a spiritual teacher who I was connected with once said, reality is a function of contradiction.
Mm.
In other words, as long as you're still trying to get everything neatly tied up into a single little box where everything makes sense, that's not reality.
Right. And hence it's Apollo specifically that Hermes is stealing from, right? Who in some ways is the sun god. And you mentioned Rudyard's kind of take on. Now that's a loud bell. Surely you can hear that one.
Okay. Or maybe I'm going deaf.
I'm sure my listeners are going to hear that bell. I might just let those go through. It's that level of order that Hermes is obviously like, this is too ordered, this is too structured. How about that one?
Oh, I heard a tiny, tiny whisper. Which I would have missed if you hadn't.
Really?
Drawn my attention.
It's so loud, it feels like it's right next to my ear.
Wow. But I'll be curious as to whether it will come out on the recording.
It'll make for an interesting edit. But but anyway, I think it's that, like Rudyard's talking about the day world and the night world, and of course Hermes is an in-between, and maybe Gemini is an in-between. Because I've always, all the descriptions, ever since I was really early on in the astrological journey, I was like, nah. But whatever descriptions of Gemini were out there was always just like half the story, right? Like it was just giving you half, and then you needed to get the rest of it.
They're only talking about one of the twins.
And I always find when I was engaging with the energy in the world versus what I was told about the energy, it was a very different experience.
Exactly.
But often I did, there is the sense of often, quick-witted, a lot of different ideas. Humor was always something that I've found in the engagement. Mm-hmm. You know, like if you can tap into humor with a Gemini, then you're really getting somewhere. And then lots of different philosophical material is there. You know, like there was I've always found that to be true. But you know, that it's rational and logical and things, I'm like, that feels like half the story. And the other half you had to maybe fill out with the rest of the chart, like you said, like that the client that had the water grand trine, well, the other twin was watery, or the earth grand trine, the other twin is earthy. Maybe a fiery one too.
The earthy example that came to mind was something with a grand trine in earth.
And okay, well, there you go. Yeah.
In Gemini. And so a different kind of a thing. So all the nimble mind and the quick-wittedness and all the rest of it of Gemini went towards building an incredibly impressive career in the world of banking and finance.
Wow. Yeah.
It couldn't be more earth material than that. Right. Well, maybe there's other things. And then, you know, at the Uranus return, which was when I met this person, was feeling absolutely gagged and bound and choked by what he'd built up.
Really?
The density of all of the material structures. And it was like, basically, help, how can I get out of this kind of thing? So, wow. You know, there it was. He was in a way, became trapped by that other twin. So he felt his mind couldn't breathe anymore. Too much focus on too many material things, you know?
Wow. Yeah. Got to keep one twin immortal. Got to keep one twin breathing.
Like those famous images of Hermes with his little winged helmet
Yeah.
and his little wings on his ankles,
Yeah.
and holding his staff and, usually flying up. I've actually got two Hermes images in this room, which won't be visible from this angle. In fact, one is behind some files up on a cupboard, which won't show, and one is on the windowsill in front of me.
And I'm seeing a lot in this trip to Greece, obviously, and every time I see a Hermes, it's just kind of so recognizable. The expression, the lightness, the fruit, the sense that he's off somewhere, that that he's not hanging around for very long, our friend.
And I would guess that maybe every time you see an image or a statue or something of Hermes, that it points to a significant moment, just at that moment, that you might be just thinking about something and he arrives to flag it up for you,
Right.
or an important point in a conversation or drawing your attention to something. You
Yeah.
know, that he's alive, so to speak. It's
Yeah.
not just a random sighting, as it were.
Absolutely. Well, Melanie, this has been so good, but I think we're going to have to actually wrap up
Yeah, I think so.
tragically, because yet again, I'm like, surely we could do another 2 hours. But no. Are there any maybe as we wrap up, is there any way to sort of pull all these threads together, or should we just leave them all out there? Is there anything that you can that springs to mind as we think of Hermes here?
I'm kind of dumbstruck. I can't think of anything. I could think of like a list of words and so forth, but they're all words which we have said along the way. And so I can't think of any way of making coherence. That's the thing.
I think that Gemini's role is not necessarily to wrap everything up nice and clean and neatly, but to put those little stones that pick up the moon when the moon comes out, right? To put those stones around and give us a sense of
Or maybe when I was younger, right? Maybe I would have felt that it was necessary to kind of wrap things up and tie the bow and all the rest of it and understand it and make it all ordered. And I probably spent quite a bit of energy trying to do just that. But now I don't really mind if there's sort of leftover bits and pieces or whatever.
Yeah, the way I see it is that in this conversation, there's been lots of little doorways. And I actually think that's really great for a podcast, because those doorways people can pause and follow and or come back to and wonder, like, oh, that. And oftentimes it's those little things where you get that hint, just like when you picked up the Rudyard book as 19-year-old Melanie, you're like, ah, this, you know. So
Exactly.
my prayer to Hermes for this episode is that there's moments like that for people to pick up, to go back to follow up on, to wander off into that path, and that it can take them to really rich material and ultimately, like you said, give them a sense of the one, give them a sense of that there's something in this is like, like we're little players in a massive universe,
Yes,
and
and that our journey is guided
yeah, that it's
by
guided.
something, someone that we may not see or know, and so on. But it's there, obviously, if one examines what happens,
That lost twin is sort of not lost. It's still around us, pops in every now and again.
Exactly.
Beautiful. Well, Melanie, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Chris. It's been a total pleasure speaking with you, as always.
Very enjoyable. Well, you have a great evening, and thank you from all of my listeners as well. And really stoked to have you on for a second slash third, maybe fourth if we split this into two time.
Okay, thank you. I'm now remembering a whole area of Gemini I didn't even mention. The esoteric ruler of Gemini is Venus,
Ah, interesting.
which, in the light of everything we're talking about, just makes total sense.
Yeah.
You know,
Yeah, love and connectedness
yeah,
and
and connecting.
yeah.
And
Well.
also the symbol of Venus looks like the hand mirror. So Gemini is always looking for somebody with the hand mirror so they can find their other twin.
Oh, wow.
You know?
Oh, this is good stuff.
I knew there was something I was forgetting. Oh, damn.
Well, we're still recording, so I've got it.
Hermes. Oh, really?
Yeah.
I
I
didn't
haven't
realize.
actually pressed stop
Oh,
anywhere.
that's so
A
totally Hermes.
little postscript that I
Okay. That's very Hermes. Just sort of
can
snuck it in at the last moment there.
add in. Yeah. I like that.
Little metalogue.
Yeah, definitely.
Just the Hermes energy has felt incredibly alive to me
Yeah, same
as
here.
we've been speaking,
Yeah,
you
we've
know.
definitely had him around.
Definitely, it really
Yeah,
feels like that.
wonderful.